Welcome to Tentpole Trauma, the podcast where we look at movies that came with hype and high hopes, but left with crushing disappointment, either critically, at the box office, or both. Freed from the weight of expectations, we seek to examine these underperformers under a new light, parsing through the good, the bad, and everything in between with the hopes of gaining a better understanding as to why they failed to find their audience. Warning, there will be spoilers, so if you haven't seen the movie that we're discussing today, I suggest you stop the podcast and go watch it. Then when you come back and listen, you'll get more out of the discussion. On this episode, we discuss Super Mario Brothers. Sebastian, and I am here with Steve.
Hi.
Welcome back, Steve.
Thanks. Good to be back.
It's been a while, but, you know, whenever we talk about video games, I got to have Steve on here with me. And to celebrate the upcoming new Super Mario Brothers movie, we got to go back 30 years to 1993 and discuss the first attempt at bringing this video game to the big screen, Super Mario Brothers. Now, before we get into the movie, Steve, do you have a history with the game Super Mario Brothers?
Yes. I played Donkey Kong in the arcade and Donkey Kong Jr., which Donkey Kong had Mario and Jr. as well.
That's correct.
And then for the Apple IIe, I had the Mario Brothers game, which is where they had Mario and Luigi in the sewers, and, you know, they were flipping like crabs and turtles and flies and other stuff. And then I got a Sega Master System first. So eventually I got a NES and the Nintendo Entertainment System and actually finally played Super Mario Brothers. But I was always more of a Sega person. But I've played Super Mario Brothers 2, a little bit of 3, Super Mario Brothers World, but like, because I got my Super Nintendo after I got my Genesis, and then Mario 64, and then pretty much every game of Mario except I stopped right after Super Mario Galaxy.
Wow, so you've played like most of the games.
Yes.
I obviously played Donkey Kong mostly in the arcade when it came out, so I was familiar with the character of Mario, and then the next time I encountered him was in the Super Mario game. I didn't have the NES, but a lot of my friends did. And I did play a decent amount of that game because when the NES first came out, that was like the game that came with it. So
right.
Everybody just played that game for a long time. And then I think I played a little bit of Mario Kart at some point, but that's pretty much it for me and Mario. That's like all I really know of the game and the mythology.
I think we played Mario Kart 64 at the most in college. Like, that was our dorm room game. We played that like crazy. That's so good.
That game is great. And I mean, the whole world of Mario is sort of fun and hallucinogenic. And, you know, if
right.
you want to smoke a little weed and play something that's not super violent, obviously, like, Mario is your man. It's a character and franchise that has endured to this day. And I have a feeling that the new movie is going to do really well, provided that it's good. But we'll talk about that at the end of the podcast. Now, I was well aware of this movie when it came out because it was like, how could you not be? It was such a head scratcher. Like, why did they make a Super Mario Brothers game? And I mean, this was definitely, you know, in the time where video game adaptations were considered terrible across the board. And I think that this movie was one of the main proponents of that pervasive attitude towards video game movies. I mean, this came out and then like Street Fighter, and there was a bunch of them, and they were all really poorly received, especially by critics and stuff. So it's kind of been this stigma that's followed video game movies right up until recently. I'd like to think that co-host Josh Miller had a hand in changing things for the world with the Sonic movies. Now Last of Us was just huge. So I think it's safe to say that we can put that to rest now, that like all video game adaptations are bad. I think we've seen a bunch of decent ones, and I think we will continue to see decent ones. But this movie was definitely not one of them. Now, what do you remember about this movie when it came out?
I remember it came out. I didn't see it in the theater. In fact, I saw it for the first time yesterday. I remember seeing the trailer and or whatever commercials for it, because there weren't really access to trailers back then. And it looked really bad, to be honest. And obviously, so far removed from the source material in my mind, according to the trailer, that I just didn't want to see it.
It held no allure for me either. I mean, A, I wasn't a huge fan of the game necessarily. B, exactly what you said, it looked nothing like the game anyway. So it just looked like a kind of goofy science fiction movie, which arguably it is. And yeah, I just didn't get around to seeing it. I think I might have watched some of it when it was streaming on like Netflix or something years ago.
It was on Netflix? Wow.
Yeah, a long time ago. I know it was streaming somewhere. And I was like, huh, the Super Mario movie. So I watched it. Weirdly, my only real connection to this movie was, for whatever reason, I got an action figure of both the King Koopa Dennis Hopper character and the Fisher Stevens character, Iggy. They made action figures of this movie, and I just found them in like a thrift store or something. And I was like, what are these? And the Iggy figure actually looked like a friend of mine. So I used to joke that it was my action figure of him. I had them for years, and they were really weird because they were sort of like this weird proportion where they're just kind of like big and stocky, but short. They were really ugly looking figures. They may be in a bin somewhere still to this day, but yeah, I did have some Super Mario figures for whatever weird reason. I would use them to sort of populate my action figure tableaus. They'd be like normal looking people in there, you know, because when you're setting up a Gotham City or whatever, you want some normies in there, or else it's all superheroes. So that was sort of my impetus for buying them. But like you, I have not sat down and watched this movie from beginning to end until this podcast. And in fact, I just finished it a few minutes ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So forgive me if my recollection of, you know, why certain things happen in this movie is a little little sketchy, because I can already feel the plot fading away from my mind. All right, well, let's talk about Super Mario Brothers, the movie, circa 1993. Now, this movie was directed by Rocky Morton and Annabelle Jankel. I don't really know who they are. One of the screenwriters is Ed Solomon, and that's a screenwriter who I'm sort of aware of. And it stars Bob Hoskins as Mario, John Leguizamo as Luigi, Dennis Hopper as King Koopa, Samantha Mathis as Daisy, Fisher Stevens as Iggy, Fiona Shaw as Lena, and the great Richard Edson as Spike. Also in there is Mojo Nixon, the strange musician, as Toad.
Right. Who is the guy that played Spike? I'm not familiar with him.
His name is Richard Edson. He actually shows up in a lot of Jim Jarmusch movies. He's a character actor. I think he's in Ferris Bueller's Day Off very briefly. He's one of the guys that steals the car out of the garage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now that face looks familiar. Okay. Got it.
But the cameo that I like the most is Lance Henriksen.
Yeah. That caught me completely by surprise and just like super way out there, man.
So yeah, let's talk about the actual plot of the movie, if it can be called that. The basic premise here is like there's, you know, a meteorite that struck Earth, right? And 65 million years ago, reminding me of the movie 65, which I recently saw in theaters.
That's cool. I like that the movie went right in it with the theme to the game.
Uh-huh.
Which I thought was nice. But then it went to this like pixelated computer retelling of the extinction of the dinosaurs.
Yeah, that was weird.
It's weird. Yeah.
It's like they're trying to evoke the game. I feel like they know they've got so little connection to the video game that they're trying to do whatever they can. And yeah, that's the only bit of the Mario Brothers theme we get in the whole movie, right?
Yes, because the soundtrack was done by Alan Silvestri. He's great, and the music's pretty good, the score at least. I mean, I can definitely hear bits and pieces of his music, and I was like, oh, it's definitely serviceable. I love when you first meet the Mario Brothers, and there's the sort of, you know, dorking around town music. It's so good.
It's funny, though, because if you've played the game, especially the Super Mario Brothers game, that music, I mean, it plays the whole friggin' game, you know? And it's arguably it's maddening, but I mean, if you're a fan of the Mario Brothers game, you expect to hear that at least two or three times, like in the movie, and they never do that. You know, it brings us back to that time in the 90s where they just were kind of ashamed of comic book movies and video game movies.
Right.
And you can really get the sense that they're trying hard to not make it obvious that this is based on a video game, and they're just kind of going in their own direction, and that's going to hold true for the whole movie.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. Like, there's two trains of thought. So you either you're embarrassed and you want to make it like a sort of mass appeal of whatever you consider as mass appeal. Like, you try to cater it for everyone, or you cater it for the fan base, the people that love the games, and they've never really, especially during that time, did it at all. Like, when the Transformers movies came out, the Michael Bay ones, like, I love the soundtrack to the original Transformers cartoon. You know, of course, composers want to do their own thing and like, make their own music. But when you have something iconic, like, especially for this Mario Brothers movie, and you don't riff on it at all, or, like, elevate it orchestrally, it just sounds, you know, it's like, what are you doing? But yeah, I like Alan Silvestri.
Yeah, I mean, the music that's in there is totally serviceable, but it does not evoke the game at all at any point. Now, let's talk a little bit about this kind of kooky setup. We see this woman bringing a baby to an orphanage. So we're getting this, you know, classic sort of leaving the baby on the doorstep. This woman is played by Samantha Mathis.
Right.
Who's going to be playing two roles in this, both Daisy and her mother. This is her mother. And then so she leaves her on the doorstep as like a dinosaur egg, correct?
Yes. Actors who play nuns on screen, whether they're like, if they're religious, whether they feel it's, you know, sacrilegious to play a nun. But I mean, tons of people have been doing it for, you know, years, playing nuns. But the reaction to a baby coming out of a freaking egg, like a human baby, it's just like, it's insane. You know, you'd think they would be like, but they kept it in the dark for years. You learn later, like, no one knows that there was this dinosaur child growing up in New York.
I mean, the whole concept of like these dinosaur people is absolutely insane. I mean, that has no relevance to the game, right? I mean, I know there are dinosaurs in the game, but are there dinosaur humans?
Okay, so I love that this film took the lizard people conspiracy.
Right.
Of that there's like these lizard people that live under the earth that are like in secret places in government, whatever. The fact that they took that and just decided that that was going to be the plot of this movie is incredible. It's just super crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot about this movie that it's insane. You're being asked right away to buy into this idea that in 65 million years ago, when the meteorite split, like the world split into these two dimensions, right? There's right. our dimension, and then there's this like dinosaur dimension where they even have like a city called Dinohattan.
Oh, I totally missed that.
And then there's going to be these people who have evolved from dinosaurs and stuff. I mean, it's just nutty, and it has nothing to do with the game other than the fact that there's dinosaurs in the game, right?
There weren't dinosaurs in the game, I think, until Super Mario World, where they added Yoshi, who also appears in this movie.
Yes.
Because before they were these like turtle monsters.
Right. I mean, in the game, you would do a lot of like landing on turtles, and then they would go back into their shells, and then you could kind of kick them and use them to knock off other characters that were coming at you or whatever. Right. But again, we're not going to see any sort of literal translation like that in this movie. It's all this sort of weird stuff. I mean, even in this movie, in the game, like mushrooms are such a huge part of the game, right?
Right.
But in the movie, they just include this like fungus that grows on everything. You know, we're going to find out that Daisy's dad has been turned into this like glob of fungus, only to be made into Lance Henriksen at the last minute. Spoiler alert.
Right.
It's just the elements of the game, the way they are used in this movie, are so bafflingly weird.
No, I don't disagree with you there. The fungus thing is, it hits a little different after having finished The Last of Us on HBO.
Totally. That's all I could think of too, was like, is this some sort of weird version of the, what is it called? The
Cordyceps.
The Cordyceps, yeah.
I find it interesting that the de-evolution of Lance Henriksen into fungus, meaning that he evolved from fungus, but I went to this natural history museum in Paris, and they show the tree of life and basically, you know, single cell organisms all the way up through, you know, mammals, reptiles. And then after man is fungus.
Interesting.
All the way on the most advanced side. And like for him to have devolved, it just doesn't make sense. Back then, I wouldn't have cared, but the knowledge I have now, I'm just like, oh shit.
Well, let's give Super Mario Brothers some credit for being so forward thinking regardless. And, you know, approaching these ideas of fungus as an evolved or devolved organism. Let's talk a little bit about our characters here, because after this setup, we jump 20 years and now we are meeting our main characters, the Marios. And I say that because Mario's name is Mario Mario, and Luigi's right. name is Luigi Mario. And they are played respectively by the great British actor Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo. Now, how do you feel about these two guys playing the Mario Brothers?
Bob Hoskins is, I only know him from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I mean, that and Danny the Dog, where he can play as a completely different person. I thought it was great. I thought the casting for them is actually pretty just spot on. At the time, me, 1993 me, I'm sure I was completely fine with it. Still didn't mean I wanted to see the movie. But yeah, Bob Hoskins is great.
At this time, I think you probably couldn't have gotten better character actors to play these guys. I mean, neither of them are Italian, so I think that would probably be an issue today if
yeah.
you were doing a live-action version. Although in the new one, we've got Chris Pratt playing Mario, and he's not Italian, so I guess they're not worrying too much about that.
Right.
I mean, it's funny because the character of Mario in the game and Luigi are very stereotypical Italians, right? So
right.
you don't want to necessarily go with the whole, hey, I'm a Mario kind of thing.
Right. That voice actually, because before with the Super Mario Super Show, that was Captain Lou Albano, who played him as this like gruff, like Brooklynite. But that actual like super heightened Mario voice, that didn't come until I think 1996 when Super Mario 64 came out.
Okay.
This voice actor, Tinas, I think is his last name. Anyway, he created that voice, which we think of as Mario now. But yeah, that was like 23 years ago or something.
So that would have been after this movie.
Yes.
So there was no version of Mario's voice to necessarily draw on to as a characterization.
Right. Unless you went with the Lou Albano voice.
Well, and Bob Hoskins definitely plays it as like a Brooklyn guy.
Yeah.
He's doing Brooklyn accent. And John Leguizamo is basically kind of doing the same thing. They're doing similar, you know, accents, which makes sense as they are brothers. I do have to say that maybe at this time you could look at John Leguizamo as a kind of romantic lead, but since he has not gone on to be that kind of actor over the course of the last 30 years,
right,
I struggle with him. He's going to have this love interest with Samantha Mathis in the movie. Like, we're supposed to kind of like buy into their like attraction. Samantha Mathis is introduced as this NYU archaeology student who's like at this dig, and she finds like some dinosaur bones at the dig. And the way this connects to the Mario Brothers is there's these mafiosos, the Scarpellis, who are trying to get their unionized guys back to work at the dig. So they're causing problems, but they're also causing problems for the Mario family business, the plumbing business. And so that's kind of how our heroes get drawn into this whole like archaeological dig scenario.
I was totally done with it. And being a graduate from NYU, I was like, oh, cool, it's NYU.
Right. And as a person who lives in Manhattan, there must have been a lot here for you to relate to.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I've not dealt with union like construction holdups or anything like that.
Not yet, anyway. But yeah, so there's this whole ridiculous setup where Samantha Mathis is trying to make a phone call, and, you know, Luigi lets her use the phone, the payphone that he's using. Back in the day, kids, we used to have these things. And then, of course, he's like crushing on her, and Mario gets him to ask her out to dinner at an Italian restaurant with his girlfriend. And it's just this sort of like attempt at a romantic subplot that definitely does not work. I'm not getting the heat from either of these actors.
I don't know. I believed it even now. Like, it was okay. And especially, you know, no one has a cell phone. Mario comes out of a deli with a bottle of Avion. I didn't see Avion referenced in the credits, so it's not like, it was almost a diss on Avion water.
Because he's using it for like their broken van's radiator.
Yeah, which you don't really see only in movies. I don't think of any situation where I've been where I've seen someone need a port. But I don't really drive a lot.
Well, trust me, it can happen. Your radiator can overheat and you need to pour some water in it. But it does seem really mean that whoever owned that bodega would only sell him an expensive bottle of Avion to put in his radiator. And that's what he's sort of grousing about.
Right. But yeah, the date, I thought it was cute.
You're just a romantic guy at heart, is what it is, Steve.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, they're all being sort of shadowed by the Iggy and Spike characters, as played by Fisher Stevens and Richard Edson. I guess the joke of them is they're, you know, they're the two idiot guys, and they're working for King Koopa, who's played by Dennis Hopper. And so, like, throughout the movie, they're sort of bumbling and they screw up and all that. But then at one point, they're going to actually have their brains altered so that they're super smart. You know, now they're using like fancy words and stuff like that. I did think that was kind of funny, and I do like Fisher Stevens and Richard Edson as character actors. I mean, everybody's got sort of like a weird hairdo in this movie, too, especially right, once we get into Dino Hatton. Dennis Hopper has this crazy kind of like corn rosy type hair.
Yeah.
Richard Edson has like a, you know, undershave kind of look, almost like a skater haircut, which is odd for a guy who looks like him. And, you know, something weird's going on with Fisher Stevens's hair. Like, it's curly on top, but sort of straight in the back. The whole, like, production design and, like, costume design and makeup and hair and stuff in this movie is pretty kind of out there for almost everybody except for, like, our three main leads.
I want to get into that because, for me, this movie, it's very much like 90s movies of the time in that it feels very much of the same ilk as Demolition Man or Judge totally. Dredd or even The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
And especially more with, I think Demolition Man came out the same year.
Right around this time, yeah.
You can't do the video game exactly, so they just did this sort of super built-up production-designed thing. in place of that.
Once we get to Dino Hatton, it reminded me in a lot of ways of what Tim Burton did with Gotham City and Batman. And in fact, I read on Wikipedia that that's kind of what they were going for. Like, they were doing their own thing. It's not exactly the Batman thing with, like, the kind of retro 40s stuff. Mm-hmm. But, like, you can tell that, like, once we get to Dino Hatton and they're in the city and everything, it's all a set. They're in some giant studio and there's, you know, all this stuff that's been built up and all that. I think that's why it sort of feels like all the science fiction movies of that time, because they were all kind of shot the same way.
Right.
Where they're like done in an interior set somewhere.
Yeah, because I mean, now you have all the CG sets and backgrounds.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a completely different look. But yeah, right back then, even Total Recall, the Mars stuff is completely this stuff as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's pre-green screen, pre-volume. I mean, who knows? In like 30 years, maybe people will look back at the phase we're in now and be like, why did everything look like everyone was just standing in front of a screen, you know? Right. I mean, I haven't seen Quantumania yet, but from what I saw of the trailers, it just looked like people standing in front of screens the whole time.
That is true, but I think because it's not in San Francisco, like the original two Ant-Mans are, like, I went with it. I didn't really read many of those reviews, but just the collective uproar about it seeming like they were in nothing and acting against nothing. It's like the quantum realm. It's completely made up. How were they going to do that in any way?
Well, this will be a topic to be mitigated on some other day and on this show. Yes. Because Quantumania is arguably the first Marvel movie that is going to be a total failure financially. So it will be discussed here on Tentpole Trauma. But anyway, let's get back to the movie at hand. What ends up happening is Spike and Iggy kidnap Daisy, right?
After the date at the restaurant, Mario takes Daniela home and they leave the two young lovers to do their own date thing. And when Mario drops her off, and obviously he doesn't stay over because it's a movie for kids, Iggy and Spike mistake her for Daisy, or think she's Daisy in disguise.
Yeah.
And kidnap her instead. That's when Daisy and Luigi go to the dig site so that Daisy can show Luigi what she's working on.
Right.
And then they ran into the Scarpellis, sent these goons to ruin the dig site by flooding it.
Right.
So then Daisy and Luigi leave, go all the way back to Mario's place and grab him and say, like, we need your, you know, there's a plumbing incident, and they go back to the dig site.
I did appreciate that that's how we bring Mario into the story, is that there's a plumbing mishap that he's got to go fix.
It's perfect. It's spot on.
Let's talk a little bit about, like, the humor of this movie, because it's definitely going for comedy. Another thing that I read about it was the tone that they were really aiming for was Ghostbusters. That was sort of their ideal.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think they achieve that necessarily. A lot of the jokes here are pretty kind of dumb. I would say this movie is guilty of just kind of being overall kind of dumb. Like, that's how I would describe it. And I know that's not a very eloquent descriptor, but that's just kind of how I felt while watching it. And I mean, the movie has such a terrible reputation, and I was, you know, expecting it to be like a bad movie. It's a bad movie that's bad just because it's kind of stupid. It's aimed at kids, so it has that kind of, like, oh, this is, like, just a little too stupid for me to watch kind of vibe going. But I don't know, maybe if I was a kid, like, maybe, like, 7 or 8, this would be fun.
I can see that. I want to say the same thing about Tank Girl. I really enjoy that movie.
That's more adult, though. Like, Tank right. Girl has, like, adult humor. There's, like, nothing above, like, PG level humor here. Like, there's no real sexualization of anyone.
Right.
There's no gore or any, like, sort of, the violence is all very subdued, you know? It's like people shooting evolution guns at each other or whatever, and people turning into dinosaurs. It's very PG. It is actually just rated PG, so it's okay. Not even PG-13. So yeah, and that's appropriate because there's never any real violence or sexual situations or anything like that. It's all very kid friendly.
I mean, as it should be.
But it's weird though, because it is so kid friendly, but yet it's kind of like dark and grimy, and there is sort of a like unpleasantness to it. You know what I mean?
I mean, when they get into Dino Hatton, it's like a police state.
It's like a dystopia. So who is it that actually kidnaps Daisy and brings her into the other dimension?
So when they go in to take care of the plumbing, Mario and Luigi are like deep in the water, and Daisy's like off to the side. And that's when Iggy and Spike grab her.
Okay.
And it's a quick transition to her getting grabbed and then Luigi and Mario chasing after them in the tunnels. I do like that Iggy is actually the name of a character from the game. He's one of the Koopalings. And then Spike is like a generic character. He's not anyone specific in the game, but that was a nice touch. They grab her. She gets pulled into this this weird particle effect portal, which I guess was done with computer graphics, I'm assuming.
Well, there's the moment where we see like Mario falling through like the dimensions or whatever, yes, which looks very Lawnmower Man. It felt like any movie that had CG in it at this time would have a moment at least in the movie where we'd get this sort of ridiculous looking fully CG environment like this, like right, you're going into a computer or something. And it always looks terrible. I mean, it dated horribly even back then.
That's true. That scene did remind me of the first Doctor Strange movie, though, when he gets sucked into through the dimensions. But yeah, obviously a super old version of it. I thought it was fun. Luigi grabs a necklace off of Daisy before she gets pulled in,
right,
which is the MacGuffin of this entire movie.
Yeah, and let's talk about that as it relates to our villain. We've got King Koopa, who is a Tyrannosaurus Rex who has evolved into Dennis Hopper, right?
Right.
He is basically the lord and ruler of this land, although he's kind of framed like he's a politician because there's Koopa signs or whatever. He's like Big Brother in a sense, in a way.
Right.
Like there's a real dystopic vibe about how he sort of presented. There's signs of him all around where he's, you know, made to look like almost like Russian propaganda or something.
It's more like a Orson Welles kind of Citizen Kane kind of,
right,
you know, vote for whatever. On the poster, I think he's like kissing a baby or something.
I got uncomfortable sort of Trump vibes from him at some point too.
I could not help but make that comparison, especially with the way Dennis Hopper's face is and how angry he looks and how orange his hair is.
Yeah.
It's as if Trump took notes on every performance that Dennis Hopper has ever made. It was truly just crazy. And I could not help but think, I mean, granted, yeah, this movie came out, you know, 1993. There was no reason to think that back then. But now you can't help it.
Well, but Trump was a very famous figure at that point. They could have been basing it on him somewhat. He wasn't the way he is now, but he was out there. I mean, that could have been in mind when they did this.
Maybe, but if you look at, you know, Waterworld and Speed, he plays, it's Dennis Hopper being Dennis Hopper.
He's actually kind of weirdly subdued in this. I mean, his character is insane just in concept, but like his actual performance is not as like amped up as he is in Waterworld, which, you know, is a movie I watch all the time.
Yes.
Like he's definitely a little more tamped down in this, which is surprising considering he's playing a friggin' dude who's a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Right.
We got to mention his henchwoman, Lena, played by Andor's mom, Fiona Shaw. Like, she's kind of hot in this.
No, when I saw the opening credits and her name shown, I was like, what's she doing in this movie?
She's kind of vamping it up. I mean, she's like in high heels and she's got this crazy hairdo.
Because I know Fiona Shaw mostly as being Aunt Petunia from the Harry Potter films.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I never imagined her as a young, you know, woman. So it was interesting.
So their plot is they need Daisy's necklace, right? Which has a sliver of the meteorite in it, right?
Right.
And then there's this big chunk of the meteorite or the whole meteorite or whatever in this underground world.
Right.
And if they put that sliver into the meteorite, then both our dimension and the dinosaur dimension are going to become one dimension, correct?
Yes.
All right. So I have all this right. So this is the big, dumb, stupid, world-ending sci-fi plot that's going to drive this ridiculous fucking movie.
I mean, it was very unclear in the beginning when they go through the portal. There's this giant flat like black area with a blue ring around it, which is the meteorite site, but you don't really realize that until like way later in the movie. Not that you needed to know, but it was interesting that, oh, they show it in the beginning, the meteorite.
Now, is any of this shit in the video games anywhere?
Princess Daisy is a character from the 1989 Game Boy game Super Mario Lands.
Okay.
And I think that's where they got the name from. King Koopa, he's called Bowser now, but in the games he was always Koopa. Fiona Shaw's character, I think they're doing like Richard Donner Superman. It's like Lex Luthor and his henchwoman.
Right.
They're just doing that thing. What they did to Toad, who's like this busker person.
Toad is Mojo Nixon. And Mojo Nixon is like a satirical musician who was popular in the early 90s. And he sang lots of wacky songs. He's kind of like rednecky, but it's a joke. And he was on MTV a lot. Like they would just kind of put him in these like interstitials because he's a wacky guy. So like our heroes go into this dimension, right? And it's like we talked about where now we're in Dino Hatton, which kind of looks like a weird combination of Tim Burton's Batman and mixed with Demolition Man, mixed with Blade Runner. It's just a whole bunch of shit, like basically. And weird looking like characters that are sort of part dinosaur. At one point, there's this like woman with this weird like half dinosaur face who's like walking a dinosaur or something. And she's like, hey, get out of my way or whatever.
The brothers, like they get pushed off of a ramp or something. They see two tiny dinosaurs chewing on the fungus. And then you see a woman who's pushing on an egg and someone tries to grab it. And she's like, stay away from my baby.
Right.
So like that's all made clear that these are the dinosaur people.
They have Daisy's necklace because John Leguizamo grabbed it from her. But then they're up on like this catwalk, and then this character, Big Bertha, played by Francesca P. Roberts, sort of like bumps into them, and she gets the necklace for some reason, right?
Yeah, so this old lady mugs Luigi.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, she asks them if they have any weapons, and they're like, no. And then she pulls out like a gun and's like, well, I've got one.
It's a cattle prod. She actually shoots Luigi with a cattle prod.
This movie is friggin' insane.
And then Big Bertha comes and steals the necklace from the old lady. And Mara's like, oh, can you give it to us? And then she's like, catch me. And then she jumps off with these jump boots and flies away.
The jump boots are going to be important because this is the only way we're going to get the characters jumping around. And if you've played the game, that's kind of the main move they make is to jump really high. And so this is how the movie deals with it, by like making these like sci-fi moon boots that have like these pneumatic platforms in them that can make you jump really high. And that's how people get around with them or whatever. But yeah, Big Bertha like jumps away with it.
And at this point they meet Toad, who's singing anti King Koopa songs. So the police come and they take him for doing anti-government stuff. And then Mario and Luigi start complaining, like, why you're arresting him for singing. But they don't realize that Koopa has already put out an APB to get the plumbers. And then the cops realize they're plumbers and also arrest them.
So this ends up with them like at a police station, which just kind of looks like a normal police station. And then they're put into like a prison, which is just in the police station, but it's like a full prison. So we get like this whole like side journey of like a prison escape, basically, right?
They go through decontamination, like they spray them with powder, and then they dump all this liquid on them. And then they go through it looks like a bunch of dog kennel cages stacked on top of each other, but it's all people. And then they get thrown in and Toad's above them. That's when I think Koopa meets them in the interrogation room.
And this is where we see like people being turned into dinosaur-headed the Goombas. Now, we need to talk about the Goombas, okay? Because one of the only things that I remembered from this movie, one of the only images that I would ever sort of think of when I thought of this movie, is these Goombas, because they're like big people, but with like these sort of almost like Nazi type long coats on, but then they've got these tiny little dinosaur heads, and it's just the weirdest design choice. Like, why don't they just have normal sized dinosaur heads? Why are the heads small? Is this some sort of reference to the game?
No, I think it's referring to dinosaurs having very small brains.
Right.
And that Patrick Tatopoulos did the creature effects for this movie.
And he's good. He's good.
Yeah, yeah. This is way before he did iRobot and Godzilla, whatever. Anyway, yeah, I think it's just meant to be super weird.
Because Toad is going to get turned into one of these Goombas. And he's going to be right. Kind of like our point of reference Goomba, you might call him, throughout the rest of the movie.
Exactly.
And this is the Goomba that I remember specifically, because there are different kind of Goombas, sort of. You have different types of dinosaur heads. Some look kind of more like alligators or whatever. But his is kind of more like, I don't know, a slee stack kind of looking thing or whatever, if you know what slee stacks are from Land of the Lost.
Yeah, he also looks like, you know, the Dinosaurs TV series?
Yeah.
His head sort of looks like the reminds me of the dad from that.
Yeah, and I'm not really exactly sure what the Goombas are supposed to be doing. I know they're like King Koopa's like soldiers, right?
Yeah, they're his like, you know, stupid commandable troopers. But the thing is, the Goombas in the video game, they're mushrooms with feet.
Weird.
So this is completely different. And I had to look up what the actual word Goomba meant. It always had this connotation like, it's definitely an Italian word, but it means, yes, like associate. Yeah, so that fits, but that had nothing to do with the mushroom people.
Yeah, I mean, like we've been saying, it's like this whole movie just kind of goes off in its own direction. And I guess when they were like developing this with Nintendo, the Nintendo executives were like, you know, fine, make a movie, do whatever you want. They didn't get any pushback from Nintendo about this crazy fucking movie. I think that would be a very different situation now. I think that these video game companies are really, you know, much more protective of their storylines and their characters. And I think to the benefit of video game movies, I mean, I think there's, you know, good cause to care about these characters. It's sort of, it's, you know, it's exactly the same thing that happened with comic book movies. And, you know, oh, look what happens when you actually try to honor the characters and everything. You have these movies that do really well. And I think we're sort of now entering into this like video game renaissance where people are going to be sick of superheroes. And so now we're going to get like, you know, all the cool games of the last 20 years will be made into cool movies. And some of them will be hits and some of them won't. But anyway, there's none of this has any real connection at all to the game. And I think that's kind of like the main thing why people didn't like this movie so much. That, and it's just kind of bad. Yeah, so at this point, I'm kind of like losing track of what happens because, you know, they get out of the jail and they run around and they do a bunch of stuff. I mean, are there details here that you'd care to fill in?
So they escape from the prison and they get into cars, which would have been a perfect point to go into like a Mario Kart type thing.
But this was before Mario Kart, though, right?
Mario Kart came out in 1992.
Oh, okay. So this is after Mario.
Yeah. Part. So like we were saying, all these 90s action sort of sci-fi movies, there was always a car chase. So it's just like, you know, it just makes sense.
Right. And this is where it totally reminded me of the Tim Burton Batman, because they're driving around in these cars, right? And like the cars are kind of cool looking.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
They've got like cow catchers on the front. And
right.
I wasn't fully understanding the way they kind of had those bumper car like little arms that came up, because what are they supposed to be, electric, and they're going off of some sort of grid or something?
Yes, that's exactly the case. And then they also have the, yeah, like you said, the cow catcher. It's more like a steam shovel or whatever they call it, a bulldozer attachment to the front of these cop cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going around and doing these, you know, massive drifts, swerve turns, and crashing into everything.
But it's that 90s sort of, it's filmed in a studio kind of thing. Like, they didn't go out and shoot this on the streets anywhere, you know? And right. And it's funny because, like, when you watch those first two Batman movies and, you know, Batman's chasing somebody around with the Batmobile or getting chased, it's kind of going slow, you know, because they're, like, driving a car in just, like, a, you know, inside, basically, in a studio. And so you get that same sort of feeling here where things aren't really going that fast. They're trying to have an exciting car chase, but it's not very exciting because it's just not going fast. This is not Mad Max or Fast and Furious. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, totally. I mean, we've come such a long way for car action. I mean, there were already good movies at this point for that too. And these genre films were just not doing it.
It's kind of like, why did they bother? You know, it's like they felt like they had to or something, like, well, we have to have a car chase. And I'm sure there was a toy element to it too. Like, they probably made toys of those cars. And so we got to show them off and have a chase. But again, like, yeah, they're not referencing Mario Kart. These are just random cars they've designed.
Right. I think that there's two things that happen when Toad gets turned into a Goomba. For some reason, the other Goombas give him a harmonica.
Because that's what he had when he was a human. He was a, like, busking musician. He had a guitar and a harmonica.
Got it.
Like Bob Dylan.
So that's how you differentiate him. And then Luigi and Mario, they're near the fungus, and this thing from the game drips down from the fungus, and Luigi's like, oh my god, look at this. And Mario's like, forget it, let's go. That's when Fiona Shaw goes to get Daisy for Koopa, and she basically puts her in a dress and refers to her mother. And then after that, Iggy and Spike get evolved so that their brain folds get expanded and they're smarter.
It's weird because at this point, like, Mario and Luigi, like, lose control of the car or whatever, and they end up in this, like, desert outside of the city or whatever.
Right.
And it just feels like they didn't know what to do, so, hey, let's just go out to, like, a rock quarry somewhere and shoot some scenes, because it's like, why are we out in a friggin' desert?
It's, I guess, a reference to Calamari Desert, which is a location in the games. It's really out there. Like you said, there's no really reason, but I think this is where the sort of slight, super far reaching, maybe I'm stretching it a bit here too, where you get some of the game references, because Spike and Iggy go to the desert to look after them, and now that they're smart, and they're driving this, like, six wheeler moon buggy thing, and they fall off a cliff and land in mud. And that's when the Mario Brothers get them.
Right.
And then they agree to team up. They basically, from a conversation, determine that the corpulent person who has the rock is actually Big Bertha. And then basically, oh, we got to go to this club. And then they steal a dump truck from a mining site. And here's where the drivers of the dump truck, there's these guys in these black gas masks.
Yeah, they were cool.
Which is a reference to the Shy Guys from the game.
Okay.
So, like, that was all, you know, cool for me. Probably not enough for fans of the games to be, you know, super excited, but it was something, at least.
Let me ask you this, like, unrelated to the plot or the game. Our main characters are Luigi and Mario, right? This movie is ostensibly about them and their relationship. What is it we're supposed to be getting from their relationship? Like, I don't feel like at any point there's any sort of, like, conflict that they're trying to work over. I mean, there's a little bit where it's like Luigi tells Mario to take, like, the tunnel or whatever, but he knows that he's going to take the bridge or whatever, or vice versa. So it's like you kind of get this hint that, like, I don't know, maybe Mario doesn't listen to Luigi or something, but it never really amounts to anything, you know, in the story. It's like you would think that there would be some kind of thing they're trying to work through.
Right.
But it just feels like they're not even bothering with that at all, or it got cut out or something.
It's so slight. So you have Mario, who's been the father, mother figure for Luigi. You learn during the date his entire life.
Right.
Mario's mentoring Luigi on the relationship stuff with Daisy. And then Luigi's basically telling Mario, you just got to go with the flow. And you just got to trust in,
right,
in the process, I guess. He's like, trust the fungus at the end. Or
there's one point where they're in like a shaft and Luigi jumps out into the shaft and he's floating there. So he thinks that, I don't know, there's some sort of, I don't know, force keeping him suspended. It turns out it's actually he landed fortuitously on a hook in his like suspenders or whatever. But he's telling Mario to, you know, take the leap of faith. And this is like a thing that you see in stories a lot. Take the leap of faith. The character's right. Got to jump off the building or do whatever. And that's supposed to signify them putting trust in something bigger than themselves.
I mean, it happened in, I just saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse again recently, and that's the same thing happens there.
Yeah, no, it's a trope in fiction, but it's so kind of ham-fisted in this movie that I never once fully understood like what these characters were supposed to be learning from each other. I mean, I think you illuminated it a little bit. I think you're right. Mario's supposed to be inspiring Luigi to, like, you know, get the girl and be more proactive about these sort of things. And Luigi's trying to get Mario to not be so cynical, I guess, and have a little bit more faith and stuff. But yeah, it's barely touched upon. But let's talk about the whole scene with Big Bertha at her lair or whatever.
Okay, so the soundtrack for this movie is pretty good. Like, the first song they play when they go to the club is
Love is a Drug, right?
Love is a Drug by a cover. The cover is done by the Divinyls.
Yeah, I like the Divinyls.
And then the slow dance song when Mario has to basically steal the necklace off of Big Bertha is I Would Stop the World by Charles and Eddie. And I've never heard that song before. The first time I heard it was in the movie. And it's a really good song. I tried Shazamming it. Didn't work. I had to go into YouTube and do a search for like Big Bertha dance song in the Mario Brothers movie.
Oh, wow.
Thank God someone in the comments told me what the song was, because I had no idea. It's not on Spotify. It's not on Apple Music. I think the only way you can listen to it on YouTube, and the record and the CD and the cassette tape, they're all like pretty expensive on eBay. It's a hard song to get, apparently, but it's good.
I hate to break it to you, but if you had gone to Wikipedia, it says right here that it's, I Would Stop the World by Charles and Eddie right here in Wikipedia.
Okay. I went through a much longer process for that.
The song that I noticed other than the Love is a Drug cover was Walk the Dinosaur by Was Not Was with George Clinton. I remember that song from back in the day. It's a little on the nose there, but hey, we're dealing with a movie with dinosaurs.
It's a perfect song for this. This has been used in a bunch of movies now, but it's totally fitting here. And I'm glad they played it again during the end credits.
It's pretty hilarious that this movie came out, I think, like a little more than a month before Jurassic Park.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, this movie and its silly dinosaurs then got completely clobbered by Jurassic Park and its hyper-real dinosaurs just a few months later, or like a month later.
I'm so glad I didn't have the bad taste of this movie in my mind before I went to see Jurassic Park. That would have been horrible.
Although I will give it to them in the special effects department with the Yoshi character. There's a little dinosaur that is ostensibly it's Koopa and Lena's dinosaur, but it makes friends with Daisy. It's a pretty well realized like baby dinosaur.
Yoshi is the royal family's pet and has just been imprisoned. And yeah, they make friends. And the dance scene at the club, I feel pretty bad for Big Bertha during this sequence, because she's kind of into Mario at this point.
Yeah.
And he's just like leads her on, basically. She's like super helpful throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, she gives them their boots, which they're going to use to escape from the club as the villains descend upon them.
Right.
She doesn't give them their outfits, though. And I got to talk about the outfits real quick, because, again, this is such a 90s thing. Like, most of the movie, the characters have just been, like, running around in their street clothes. There's, like, nothing about them that would identify them as the Super Mario Brothers characters, necessarily.
Right.
And then, like, finally in the last act they basically just like are in the sewer somewhere, right? And they like see a bunch of that fungus hanging around or whatever, and they just kind of find these outfits or something. It's so weird.
No. They get to the bottom of the Dino Hatton version of the World Trade Center, which is the building where King Koopa has all the stuff, or everything's in that building. The de-evolution machine and the former king. They go in the basement where the maintenance room is, and they find the costumes in a locker.
Ah, okay.
And that's when they decide to, because they're dinosaurs, turn off all the heat by shutting off all the hot water in the building.
Right, yes.
To make everything cold.
Now, here's something you can help explain for me. At a certain point, Daisy escapes from her tower prison, right? Because, you know, we put her in the tower because that's what you do with princesses or whatever. And it must be said that she has disappeared from like a big chunk of this movie. How does she figure out all those Brooklyn women are being held captive?
She's been put in that room with them.
Oh, right.
And so she meets Daniela, who was also kidnapped.
Right.
So that's how she gets filled on with that. When Lena takes her out to get dressed up in her mother's old outfit to meet Koopa.
Right.
Basically, I think Yoshi bites Lena, and that's when she escapes that time. She meets up with Toad, who basically tries to give her pizza, but she doesn't want it. Sorry, that's very confusing for the listeners. Anyway, it was confusing for me. She escapes at that point. Iggy and Spike are being taken to get killed or something by other Goombas. Toad Goomba comes out with steamed vegetables for Daisy because she's a vegetarian.
Right, yeah. She doesn't want to eat meat.
Right. So they basically start shooting fireballs, but then Toad gets hit with the fireballs. So then Iggy, Spike, and Daisy escape, and then Daisy gets a fire extinguisher and puts out Toad. And that's when Iggy and Spike say that they're loyalists to the former king and take Daisy to see her father, who's basically ceiling fungus hanging over a throne.
Now, can you explain to me what happens to Iggy and Spike? How do they exit the movie? Because I don't remember.
Yeah, I think after they leave Daisy in that room, they're gone.
Yeah, and that speaks to the sort of cluttered nature of this whole last part of the movie. And I have to admit that I had a tough time really paying attention at this point, because it just turns into a bunch of running around and, you know, doing stuff. And, you know, it's like Mario versus Koopa, right?
Yeah.
What's Luigi doing?
So Luigi meets up with Daisy, who's escaped. Luigi and Mario have come into the building.
Yeah.
And when they meet up with Daisy, she asks Mario's like, you know, what about Daniela or something? And then Mario's like, oh yeah, I was going to take her to WrestleMania or something. But then she says like, oh, you don't know? She's like here, and she's in the Goomba barracks. So Mario goes to rescue the women, and then Daisy and Luigi go run off to stop Fiona, who has the crystal at this point.
Right, yes. And Fiona goes to the meteorite with the crystal and puts the crystal in the meteorite, but it then like blows her up into like a skeleton that splatters against the wall, which is like probably the only scary thing in this whole movie.
It's not scary enough where I was like, oh my God, kinder trauma, you know?
No, it's not kinder trauma. I mean, it's not even like Raiders of the Lost Ark scary. It's pretty tame.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's like Mario fighting Koopa while they're like trying to get the crystal out of the thing. And at one point, I guess the two universes do combine, because then like Mario gets all pixelated for a minute or whatever.
Right.
And they go back to like real New York, right? They're like at the construction site or something like that. Like,
right.
Honestly, it's all kind of disappeared from my brain already. I'm glad that you took notes, because I couldn't even tell you what the fuck was going on at this point.
When on my second rewatching, I rewatched that end part a couple times just to get it in my head what was going on.
You didn't have to do that, by the way, Steve. We thank you for your service, but
I mean, I got to say, I said before that this movie, it would have left a bad taste in my mouth in 1993, but knowing how legendarily bad the movie was, when I actually saw it, I was like, this isn't that bad. And then I started comparing it to all the other 90s movies at the time.
Yeah.
So Mario and Koopa are facing off on like a gang plant over the street that we saw in the beginning of the movie in Dino Hatton. He basically gets given a ba-bomb, the little wind-up bomb thing from the fungus. He starts winding it up and then puts it on the ground. But the thing's like tiny and super slow.
It does have Reebok sneakers, though.
Yes, as we learn right before it blows up. But like everyone apparently knows what bombs are, and they start, you know, freaking out. Yeah, there's a scene before this where Mario takes a bullet bill, which is another enemy type in the game. And in the game, there's like super large, giant bullets with fighter plane, like snarling faces on them. I don't know how to explain it. Anyway, he puts that into one of the jump boots, and send it flying into Koopa. So he flies against the wall. Anyway, so he's winding it up, and they're just about to face off when Fiona had already put the shard of the meteorite in. So that then triggers them getting sent back to the dig site, and Scarpelli's there with his goons. Koopa and Mario show up. Koopa shoots the de-evolution gun at Mario, but he gets out of the way. So it hits Scarpelli, and Scarpelli devolves into a chimpanzee.
Yeah, that was cool. Although I felt bad for that chimpanzee because it was missing most of his teeth. I could tell it was a really old chimpanzee.
Oh.
Because he like smiled and he had like three teeth. And I'm like, oh, that poor chimp. Probably been in the business a long time.
Right. And then Mario pulls out a fungus that he took from the fungus from the Dino Hatton, and he uses it to block. It grows in size and blocks another shot by Koopa.
Can I just say something, though, before you move on?
Sure, sure.
Just how lame that is, because if you play the game, you know that when you eat a mushroom, you grow big, right?
Right.
So, like, why didn't that happen? Like, shouldn't it have been like Mario found a mushroom or something and ate the mushroom and then grew huge, and that's how he defeated Koopa? I mean, come on.
You're absolutely right. That should have happened. They reference it. Like, so when Daisy and Luigi end up using plumbing tools to pull the shard back out of the meteorite, Koopa and Mario, and I guess the Goombas that are with them, get pulled back into the Dino Hatton dimension.
Right.
But when they go back and they turn into particles, Mario's particle self grows really large.
Yeah.
And Koopa's shrinks. I mean, and so you'd expect when they get back to Dino Hatton that Mario's just like this giant dude, but I guess that was out of the realm of special effects for this film.
Yeah, I'm sure it was budgetary, but I mean, you know, you could make somebody look huge back then. You just, not that hard. They had the incredible colossal man or whatever in the 1950s. It can be done.
Yeah.
It was just weird. Yeah, I mean, the whole way this whole thing plays out just seems like a bunch of stuff that's happening, and it doesn't have anything to do with the game. And
yeah,
I'm with you up until this point in the movie where I feel like, okay, this movie has a really bad rap, and like, yeah, I mean, it's dumb, it's for kids or whatever, but it's not like egregiously bad at this point. Like, it's certainly not as bad as a lot of the movies we've discussed on Tentpole Trauma. But then this whole third act to me just feels like a giant mess. And this is pretty typical, I think, of these kind of movies, especially around this time. I mean, I think you still see it happening today with some big budget movies that end up being kind of bad. And it's just that, you know, there's a lot of different screenwriters, there's a lot of different, you know, hands in the pot. And it's like these endings always just kind of end up turning into a clusterfuck when there's not a clear directorial vision at play. There's not somebody saying, no, this is what it needs to be, you know, following through with themes and tying up things together. It's like, instead of now, like, kind of using all the little things we've set up, all the Chekhov's guns, so to speak, it's just like, oh, we're going to throw this little bomb in there and this thing, and then they're going to go back into the dig site, and then there's going to be chimps, and it's just hard to pay attention to because it's just like, what's going on now? You know, like up until this point, I can kind of give the movie something of a pass and say like, okay, for kids, like this wouldn't be the worst thing to watch. But at this point, I'm like, now it's just bad.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree. I mean, it just sort of ends with the bomb finally going off. It blasts Koopa into the hanging rig that's above the city street. And then Luigi and Mario shoot him with the de-evolution gun until he turns into a Tyrannosaurus Rex kind of creature, and then into Primordial Ooze.
Well, and that's another thing, too, is you think, like, why wouldn't they turn him into a Tyrannosaurus Rex and then have the Tyrannosaurus Rex, like, raging for, like, a minute before they figure out how to turn him into ooze? I mean, budgetary reasons, probably. Right. But, like, that would be way more exciting.
What it should have been was, because they had gone through the sewer tunnels to get into this other dimension, it should have been near the under the crust of the earth where there was like lava everywhere, and then Mario should have hit something to make Koopa fall into a pit of lava like he does in the game. But yes, they did not do any of that.
So the end result is that, you know, Koopa is destroyed, and Daisy is sort of reinstated or instated as the ruler of this land. Her father does reconstitute himself, so yes. We do get Lance Henriksen, so I guess he's gonna rule, but she's gonna be his daughter and right. have a relationship with him and be a ruler herself, I guess.
Yeah.
So to Luigi's dismay, she's not gonna go back to real New York with him. She's going to stay. And then we get this little scene at the end where they're back at their apartment. We failed to mention that Luigi likes, you know, these sort of like conspiracy type TV shows, or like, you know, not unsolved mysteries, but like almost like In Search Of, where it's like, you know, Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster-y type.
Right. It's a show called Our Miraculous World.
You know, where they talk about, you know, these, you know, arguably fantastical things that may or may not be real. And they have a story now about the Super Mario Brothers. Apparently people have been talking about their adventures or whatever. So they're now like a myth or whatever.
Yeah, and then the Back to the Future moment happens.
Luigi's sort of despondent. Mario's girlfriend is there and they're making spaghetti dinner. And they're like, you know, cheer up, Luigi, you know. And then there's a knock at the door, and the Samantha Mathis Daisy is there with like a evolution gun or whatever. And she's like, come with me if you want to live or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, basically it's like, come back. We have to save the Mushroom Kingdom.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, total, like, basically the end of Back to the Future, like, verbatim. I mean, I thought it was interesting that it's Daniela is Mario's girlfriend, and there's no mention of Peach at all. I mean, Daniela could have been Pauline from Donkey Kong, but then that would get into a whole other can of worms. That was the woman in distress in the Donkey Kong game.
Right.
And then at the end, there's after credits in this movie.
There's an end credit scene?
Yes. When the credits roll, it has Almost Unreal by Roxette
yes.
As like the end theme song for the entire movie.
The featured song in the movie.
Yes. So then they replay the Clinton version of Walk the Dinosaur. And then the movie ends. And it goes to an apartment where Iggy and Spike are back in real New York. And these two Japanese business people want to make a game based off of their story, of their life. And they said, like, oh, you should call it the Super Cooper Cousins.
Oh, man. I should have stuck it out to the ending. Then I would have gotten my answer of what happened to Iggy and Spike.
Exactly. That's why I held my tongue then. I was like, I'll get to it.
I just figured there wasn't anything, because, I mean, why would there be something in a 1993 movie? But I guess Ferris Bueller or whatever.
Right.
That'll teach me not to sit through to the very end. I just couldn't make it all the way through Almost Unreal.
You know, there's no reason to expect that, especially back then.
Well, you know, usually at this point we do the why did this fail? I think that the main reason why this failed was that it wasn't really loyal in any way to the game or recognizable to the game. And it was just kind of like not a great movie, so it couldn't really stand on its own as a sci-fi action comedy, and it had barely any resemblance to the video game. So why would it have succeeded, I guess, is my question. Plus, the reviews were totally toxic. But do you have any other additional insights into that?
I agree with what you're saying. Like, it wasn't for the audience that would have gone to see it. And no one else cared about it.
Yeah, and there wasn't any real bankable names in the cast. You know, I mean, Bob Hoskins wasn't a big deal even after Roger Rabbit, and certainly Leguizamo wasn't a big deal, nor was Samantha Mathis, despite the heat she was bringing from Pump Up the Volume.
Right.
It's no real mystery, and the video game boom wouldn't really happen for a long time. So with that in mind, let's do a little prognostication here. What are your thoughts about the new movie?
I'm saying it's going to be huge as far as dollar value. Mario, in the collective, you know, world culture, I think is up there with Mickey Mouse now.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, a lot of gamers, and a lot of parents are going to see this movie. It's by the animation company that did the Minions movies and the...
Illumination, right?
Yeah, Illumination, yeah. It looks great. It does everything this movie didn't do. It's like you said, it's people are realizing to respect the IP. And now that they can with CG, where it actually looks like characters from the game, it actually looks like the game, they're referencing the game, people that are making it are fans of the game.
Yeah.
When you do it that way, when fans make something for fans, when you do something for yourself and don't care what other people think, I think people appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to do really well. I hope they use the music from the game.
Oh, they will. Come on.
No, I mean, but like all of it, you know, like all of the music from the game. There's so many different, like the underground level music, the desert music. I've seen the posters. They're doing Mario Kart, which is, you know, an awesome game. The voices are great. I saw Jack Black speak at Comic-Con last year. I'm like actually wearing the shirt from that.
Oh, nice.
Anya Taylor-Joy's in it. And, you know, say what you will about Chris Pratt. Like, people like him. And he was great as Emmett in the Lego movies. I know he's not doing the exact voice per se. I'm fine with that.
I don't have a problem with Chris Pratt.
He paid his dues. I mean, you see his early roles. He was in that dating movie with Anna Faris. He was in Wanted. He was on, you know, Parks and Recreation.
Jennifer's Body.
Yeah, he worked up to the level where he's at today.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess he's a kind of controversial choice for Mario because he's not Italian or whatever.
Right.
To me, that speaks to a larger problem with animation in that they think they need to put a big bankable name as the voices of these characters, which is ridiculous. I don't really honestly think Chris Pratt is bringing people into the Mario movie. I think people are going to see it because they like the Super Mario games and they like the character.
Yeah.
And you could have that voiced by an unknown voice actor and it would be fine. I don't know. Maybe the Hollywood bean counters understand this better than I do. And by having super famous people do these voices, they are bringing in some people to see the film, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, that could have been a choice by Nintendo as well.
Yeah.
After seeing the success of the Lego movie. Is Jared Leto Italian?
Leto does seem Italian, but I cannot verify that for sure.
Who knows? But his crazy Italian accent in House of Gucci was hilarious. And I would have loved for him to play Mario in the movie.
Who's playing Luigi in the movie?
I believe the guy from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Charlie Day.
Yes. Thank you.
So let me ask you this. Are you planning to see the movie in the theater?
Yes, I have my tickets already.
Nice.
I'm seeing it the 8th on IMAX. I'm super jazzed to see it. I will say this about the movie, having only seen the trailer. I think it's going to, at least surface level, be like this 1993 movie. Plumber gets sucked into this other world, meets Toad, meets the princess, and then has to save this kingdom from an evil, you know, from Koopa.
Right.
And that's like base level. The movie isn't far off, I think, from the actual new movie plot.
Speaking in very broad strokes.
Yes, there's
similarities for sure.
But with all the actual details and touches that make the video game so fun.
Well, I hope that it's really good. I look forward to getting your opinion of it when it comes out, because I will not be seeing it in the theater because I'm not really big into seeing animated movies in the theater, and I'm not a huge fan, and there's so many movies that I am going to be seeing in the theater. I will catch it on streaming, though, because I do think it looks good.
Oh, for sure.
All right, well, do you have anything else to say about Super Mario Brothers?
Not as horrible as I was expecting. That's just the thing with me. It takes really a lot for me to hate something. It was fine. I think back in 93, I would have been upset that I saw it in the theater. But seeing it now at my leisure, it was fun.
I'm glad it wasn't too painful for you. And I enjoyed our conversation. And thanks for filling me in on all the mythological details.
That's what I'm here for.
All right, well, I'm going to go lick some fungus and put on my jumper boots and get my head shrunk down to a tiny dinosaur head.
Nice.
That about does it today for Tentpole Trauma. If you like what you heard, check out our social media presence on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just look for Tentpole Trauma. That was easy, wasn't it? If you like us, hit subscribe and leave us a sterling review on iTunes, if you dare. If you really like us, head over to patreon.com and get involved in one of our fabulous tiers. You'll be glad you did. Want to communicate with Tentpole Trauma? Send an email to tentpoletrauma@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And who knows, one day you may even get your email read on one of our shows. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you real soon.